Ever feel like you're doing this teaching thing alone? You don't have to be. Share teaching is all about sharing the workload through the power of collaboration and teamwork. Together, we'll walk through all the difficult parts of teaching and learn how to streamline our processes, fine-tune our time management, and develop a more manageable workload. If that sounds like a dream come true to you, then welcome to the Shared Teaching Podcast. Let's share in the teaching to make those dreams a reality. Now here's today's Shared Teaching. Hello, and welcome to the Shared Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Susan, the creator behind Shared Teaching, and I am so glad that you decided to come and join my podcast for this special episode. This is episode 77, and it's all about advice for new teachers, the summer edition. And it's going to kickstart my summer program. So June and July, I'm going to have two episodes on Wednesday and then again on Saturday. Each week, one will be an in-depth blog post or episode if you like listening. If you didn't know, you can also read these on my blog, sharedteaching.com. And then I'm also going to have just a general quick tip, maybe something that dives into a little bit deeper topic of what I covered on a Wednesday episode for Saturdays. And you don't have to listen to them on Saturday, but it's just out there for that week. And hopefully you will enjoy it and get excited for some of the things that I have for the summer. Get you thinking and motivated for next school year. So with that, let's dive into today's episode. Now, if you are a brand new teacher, I've made this especially for you. And it's all about what to do this summer before you get those keys to your classroom. Or if you've already gotten the keys to your classroom, congratulations on your first job. But here are just some things to think through for the summertime. So it's not a total waste. It is very planned and it's very systematic about what you need to have in place before you open those doors to your classroom and welcome all your students. So the first thing I'm going to say is to start with your curriculum. Now, I use this as advice for myself as well. When I start a new school or a new district, the main thing, especially in an interview, I want to ask about is the curriculum that they use, because I want to be familiar with it. I want to be able to look it up. I want to be able to know what other teachers think about it. How do they organize it? Can I implement other things with it? So I feel like the curriculum is at the heart of your classroom because it is what you're using to teach with. And if your school is very particular about you having to follow the curriculum, then it kind of limits you in a lot of other things that maybe you wanted to go all in on. For example, having a classroom that follows the Daily Five method. Really hard to do that if you are asked to follow a set curriculum. Maybe your schedule is very confined as well. So those are things that you want to ask your admin. And usually they're around at summer because they tend to be year-round employees, and maybe they only take a month off during the summer. So you'll want to ask those questions. And then from there, you can hopefully see the expectations the admin has and also take home any teacher manuals. And then you also know if there's some flexibility on how you can plan for things such as literacy centers. And don't be too discouraged if they're pretty rigid and they want you to follow the curriculum. As a new teacher, it's very easy to follow the curriculum, especially if it's scripted. You can kind of put your own spin on it, but having that there as a guide can be incredibly valuable to you for you to focus on other things like the classroom management side maybe, or I don't know, small groups, something that maybe needs a little bit more of your time, attention, and focus than planning out specific lessons. That's already been done for you. You might as well use it at least your first year. And then once you get really confident on what you're teaching, then you can kind of put more of a spin on it and deliver it in different ways. So when you look over those teaching manuals, it's going to help address some of the questions that you have about maybe the differentiation and how you can put in literacy centers. And also, you can use the activities and the worksheets that they have for different levels and adapt them for centers. There's lots of ways to do that. So if you want to learn a little bit more about getting started with literacy centers, I do have episode 59 that you can take a look at, and it's just called Getting Started with Literacy Centers. So go ahead and check that out. And of course, if you're driving, don't do it now. I will put it in the show notes and you can click on it and listen to it later or read it, which is also an option. Okay, the second thing I want you to do over this summer, if you are inclined to want to work, is to create a solid classroom management plan. So once you know the curriculum, your next step is to figure out your management style. Now, my teaching program required me to create a plan for a class assignment, and I was very thankful that they did. If your teaching program did not, then you're going to want to spend some time this summer thinking through your classroom management system and putting something solid into place. I could probably spend many podcast episodes diving into just how to create your classroom management plan, as there's so many things you need to consider. But I don't have that time today. So one of my favorite books for starting out is called The First Days of School, and it's written by Harry Wong. If you're not familiar with this book, you should be, because Harry Wong goes into all of those little details about all of the things you could possibly ever think and imagine that you need in your classroom to have a very effective classroom management style. So it's very worth taking a look at it. I believe you can get it for very cheap on Amazon, maybe even eBay. Sometimes I got a free copy from my school district when I first started there. So that's always an option too. If your school, your new school, has a book room or something like that, a lot of times the school librarian will have books like this, or this book in particular, fingers crossed, that you can check out for free from them, or check out your public library, because that's also a good option too. Okay, so while we're thinking about our classroom management plan, something that should be in it is to think about your classroom systems. So part of creating your classroom management plan is to reflect on your classroom systems. And I recently talked all about classroom systems in my podcast episode 74, which is Organizing Your Classroom, Creating Systems That Work. So I will also plug that into the show notes so you can view it later, or not view it, but listen or read it. In this episode for 74, I briefly spoke about the three main systems that you will want to have in your classroom, and that was the teacher area, the student area, and also your small group areas. Those three ones are what I consider the biggies that are going to help you have a organized, well-ordered classroom that you can really help keep on top of. So thinking through how you want these three areas to function and flow in your classroom can really help you tremendously in feeling prepared and on top of things the beginning of the school year. Because this, my friends, when you're brand new, is kind of where it all starts to fall apart. Because you're like, woo, I have the summer and I'm decorating my class and I'm making these amazing bulletin boards. And the next thing you know, it's meet the teacher and open house and kids are coming. And oh my gosh, there's all these trainings and I'm not ever in my classroom. I'm always in a meeting. And it starts to get overwhelmed pretty quickly. So if you have those three main things well thought out, even if it's just on your head, it's going to help you feel a little bit more prepared. And having those well-working systems from the start will give a great first impression with your students' parents, because being and looking organized, take it from a parent, will instantly boost their confidence in you as their child's teacher. If I walked into like a meet and greet or an open house and the teacher wasn't organized and I looked around and I didn't see things kind of like in their place, I might freak out a little bit inside, because That's what I look for in a teacher, because I want someone that's on top of their things, that looks like they know what they're doing, that I can feel confident in. I'm not going to feel confident in someone where I see piles everywhere, half unfinished things around the room. It's okay if a bulletin board is up, but there's nothing labeled or on it. I expect, and you can explain this to your parents at the meet and greet or whatever event it is, you can say, oh, the child's artwork will be there later, or I'm planning to fill that in as we go through with our teaching and we create posters together to anchor our learning. You can also just put, this is what I did this past year, is little coming soon papers, and I stuck them on my bulletin boards where I was going to have class pictures and things like that. So don't be afraid to leave some things unfinished, but don't be having big piles and stuff around your room or things in boxes still when the parents are coming in and looking around and checking you out, because even if they might not say it out loud, silently they are judging you and evaluating you, not to scare you, but as a parent myself, that's kind of what goes through my head when I first meet any of my child's teachers. Okay, so once you have thought through your classroom systems, the next thing you want to do is think about your classroom management techniques. So part of that classroom management plan should include how you will manage behaviors. There are a lot of different ideas available. They are free, they're low cost, some can be expensive to implement in your classroom. I suggest picking just a few things to plan, but I want you to start using only one thing at a time to make sure it works well for your personality and also for your students. So you don't want to start all kinds of things all thrown together at once, because not only can that be hard for you to implement and keep on top of, but maybe the students are forgetting what prize goes with what, or what reward chart is for which thing, or whatever the case may be that you have picked to implement. So just think carefully through just keeping a few things and implementing one at a time, especially in the first few weeks of school, which will be hopefully in a future podcast episode, maybe around beginning of August. I'll start talking more about routines and things like that. So pick just a few things. I've compiled a list of four of my favorites in episode number 41, which is Classroom Management Quick Wins, if you want to take a listen to that later. Again, it will be in the show notes for you to check it out. So starting the school year with a secret student, which is one of those quick wins that I put in there, is a great way to set positive expectations in a really fun way. Plus, you don't need to spend a dime to do it, which is a favorite new teacher, right? You're on a low budget. So that is a great way that you can get kids excited and following the rules, and it's super simple to implement even on the very first day of school. So take a listen to that episode or read about it, and I explain exactly how to do Secret Student. Now, if you are a visual learner and want more help, then you might want to check out my very affordable course called the Classroom Management Adventure. CLASS is in all capitals because it's a very special acronym that I use throughout the course to help you create a solid classroom management plan that can be adjusted each year. So for one price, you can use this course over and over again. You can bounce back into it throughout the year, maybe revisit it in December when things are calm down a little bit, but the kids are ramping up and being crazy again. And it's just a really great way to have me kind of in your back pocket, leading you through exactly how to set up your classroom and create a classroom management style that is going to work for you, that is not your mentor teachers, it's not the next door neighbors, it is your classroom management style. Because if we implement something else we saw that was cute on Pinterest, it might not work well for us, no matter how cute and adorable we think it is. Maybe it's just not practical for you or for what your students like. So you can check that out. Again, I will post a link to it on my show notes, but it's shareteaching.com /classroom-management-adventure. Having a hard time speaking tonight. Okay, my last big section now is to choose your classroom decor. So this is the fun part. So I know as a new teacher, it can be very tempting to start with this at the beginning when you first get your classroom keys, maybe before you even look over the curriculum. You just want to dive into decorating, designing, choosing your colors. And trust me, I get it. This is what I love to do before I even like get a new apartment or before I bought my house. I was just reflecting and planning and thinking about all these things I could be doing. But you don't want to spend your whole summer doing projects and decorating, and then before you know it, it's back to school and you don't have those very important things like the curriculum or your classroom management figured out. But you do have a cute classroom. Right? We want to do the opposite. We want the foundation first, and then we want the cutesy later. So I urge you to really think through making sure you have the curriculum and the classroom management first, and then working on the decor. As fun as some of those new styles are out there, like boho, I think is absolutely cute and gorgeous. Keep in mind that busy classroom walls tend to be distracting to students, especially if you have ADHD students, you have any students that are on the spectrum. Having a lot of busyness around the classroom can be very challenging to pull their focus towards you and your lessons. So I personally, and this is just my preference after many, many years, is just choosing two main colors. And then that's just my theme. I no longer do like, I'm going to have the jungle theme and I'm going to have the rainbow theme and I'm going to have the ocean theme. I just pick two colors. And that works really well for me. Plus, it saves you a ton of money. You just need like your main fabric choice and a nice solid color for the back of your bulletin boards, and then your borders are your second color. And then maybe you just have some things around the room, like my book bins are black, and my teaching cart underneath my whiteboard is like a turquoise color. And so then I have my bulletin boards, they're black and turquoise, but then I reversed them for the other bulletin boards. So then I had a bulletin board that had a blue background and a black border. So it looked very pleasing to the eye. It was very simple, which is fine because I like that. But it was also not as distracting as it would be to have many things just thrown all over the walls that don't really serve as much of a purpose as having something that's truly educational and useful, like my sound wall. So think through those things when you're choosing your classroom decor. Less is more. You can always add on later as the school year progresses, but don't feel that you have to spend like hundreds of thousands of dollars because Pinterest on there, some of those classroom styles are amazing, but the reality of how the teachers probably were able to afford those things and like the cute Trofast shelves at the end of every classroom table grouping and, you know, immaculate cute benches and seating and all those things, like they didn't just like poof and then they're there, right? They probably took a while to accumulate, or the teacher already maybe had some money, or maybe their district paid them quite handsomely for a decorating your room kind of bonus. There have been some districts, I've heard some rumors about that, but I've never been a part of that. There's also donors choose and things like that, but you do have to do some work to get a lot of that, and you might not have the classroom of your dreams the first year, but you work towards that, and then you find what really works for you, and then you can get some more things. Okay, so less is more. And if you have cabinets, you're super lucky, and I'm very jealous. All right, last but not least, or maybe not last but not least, but Second to last but least is to pick a few select projects. Summer is going to be gone before you know it, so I would advise you just to pick a few select projects to work on for your new classroom. Most of the projects that I have spent hours and hours on in my early years of teaching, before school, after school, on my weekends, during my break times, I didn't use them for very long. Some of them I still have today, very few. One of them is my, what do I call them? My shared writing poems, or not shared writing, but my shared reading poems. And those are laminated posters that I've kept many, many years now, and I've used them frequently. I have now gifted them to another teacher, so hopefully they will continue to be in use because I found them to be very practical, very useful. And then another project that I made that did not last long whatsoever is I took pieces of felt and I glued, or not glued, but I decorated with fabric pens, little flowers on them, and then what else did I do to them? I ran borders with ribbon and soda mull, and it took, I don't even know how much time to create these so that they would mimic the handwriting papers that I use that had like the sky and the plants. I don't know if you know that one, but took me a long time to create these things. I still have them, but do I use them? No. The idea was the kids would use their finger and trace on the felt paper or felt pictures the different handwriting path emotions, but I don't know why I didn't use them. I think I was worried that they would get dirty and gross, and then they wouldn't wash very well, so then I just kept them in the drawer and nobody saw them. So that was just a epic fail on my part. But you learn that sometimes those things that take a really long time are just not worth it in the end. So think through it carefully. Don't be like me, where you get a quick idea and you're like, wow, yes, I should do that. And then you do it, and then you regret it because you spent a lot of time on it and it went nowhere. So think it through. Make sure it's something that you'll definitely use. And then by all means, spend some time creating it. But just make sure you're using it after you create it. Okay, so when you're choosing those projects you want to complete, you're going to look at several teacher blogs or maybe Instagram for some ideas. And I want you to pay attention to the comments and see what other teachers are saying. It's possible if the teachers from your new school are working summer school, you might even be able to ask them, what are they doing or what have they done in their classroom in the past that worked well for them? Like, what kind of things did they create, or what kind of things did they put together that they really like? Maybe they have a special folder system that you can emulate, that if it worked well for them, then you can use it. And then if they had siblings and you're in the same grade level, parents really like that kind of stuff, that they're two kids have the same organization system or whatever it is from the two different teachers, especially if they weren't able to get them in the same classroom. Just a little tidbit over there. Okay, so one of the easiest projects I think is to create student labels. Now, I love assigning students a number instead of writing their names because a lot of times the rosters change, especially if you're in a transient population like I am. So you often have like your class roster of, let's say, 20 names. If you're lucky, that's a very low number for me. But you get your class roster and you're like, yes, okay. And then you're really excited because it's your first roster and you label all the things. And then 2 days later, you get a new roster and you're like, oh, but what happened to these names? They've suddenly dropped out of the school. They've disappeared now. So, and then you have new kids in their place. So it's easiest if you just number. So I like to use my computer. I use PowerPoint for almost everything. I create Avery labels to design a nice, attractive looking label that has a picture for my beginning readers. Plus, I just love having a good picture on the labels. I think it makes it more cutesy and nice looking. And then I place their number in the corner. So for example, it might be a math label for their math book, and it'll say math book right? Genius. And then I might have a little like picture of a calculator or something to do with numbers. And then in the top corner, I'd have like the number one. And then I would just copy and paste that label. And then I would put a number two. And then so on until however many kids I need. And then I would do the same thing. I would create maybe a, let's see, last year I did a word study label. So I had folders for them that I created that were their word study folders. Then I had a writing folder. And then with the writing folder, I had a writing notebook. So I created labels for that. Then I had their math books. And then I had a math notebook. So, and then I think I had one that said unfinished work. So that's about six labels that I created. And if I had to do that for their names and then the names changed and I have to redo it, I wouldn't be a very happy camper because sometimes those labels aren't very cheap. So go ahead and just label it with numbers. If you want to later, there's room on the labels if you create them the right way that you can just handwrite their name or even have them write their name on the label. And that's okay too. So label by numbers. My book bins are also by number, and so those are just a shelf in my classroom, and I put those plastic book bins. You can get them anywhere. I buy mine in groups of, I believe it's five by Walmart. So the set I have now is going into its fourth year with students, and they're still staying strong. So it was a very nice investment of my money. And I just put really big numbers on the front of them. So it just says 1, 2, 3. And then they're just lined up in numerical order on my bookshelf. And then inside that is where the students keep things that aren't regularly used. Or maybe they're things that would get damaged inside their desk, like their headphones. Maybe their word study kits. Maybe their, what else was in there? Their writing notebooks, because they were quite flimsy. We kept them in those book bins, our science journals, because we didn't really use them very often. Don't tell anyone. Those are in those book bins. So just think through those. And that really helps with your classroom system too. Once you know how you want your systems to look, it'll be much easier to set up your organization on things like labeling. Okay, now a little trick for you, or not a trick, but a tip would be that the office staff, especially your enrollment person, whoever that is in the office, it can be your best friend, make sure you talk with them and ask them about a prediction on what your class size will be. They can look at the previous year's grade and kind of give you a good idea. Because if the enrollment is looking really crazy, they're getting a lot of new enrollments for a particular grade level, they can kind of tell you those things. So for example, if you teach second grade, then you're going to look at how many students the first grade teachers had, because that will tell you if all of those students in theory stay at the school. If first grade had 22 students, then second grade will have 22 students. And then if you have a large amount of new students enrolling, maybe you want to bump up your prep number to 30. Just saying, it's always nice to have extra. And you don't have to label all the way up to 30. Maybe you label to 25. And then you just have five extra, because maybe number three moves out in the middle of the school year. You can just quickly put a new label on a new set and have a nice fresh set of things to go to your second number three that comes into your classroom mid-year. Hopefully that makes sense. So the last project I have to suggest can be things like laminating your center materials. I know a lot of teachers spend their summers doing this, and I do want to encourage you as a new teacher to really think through, is this something that I will use? I myself have spent many an hour, which I now regret, cutting out what I thought was very cute and useful math centers, only to realize they just wouldn't work within my scheduled day. So I have lost all those many, many hours I spent cutting and laminating, plus the way that they were set up. Whoever created them did not put the pictures of the things close together so that it was easy to just make like one or two cuts. No, you had to cut out each individual little thing. But anyway, so think through that. Make sure there's something that you're definitely going to use. If you're not sure yet, maybe just wait a week or two before you start making them, and then it could be a weekend project for later. Also, an alternative to laminating can be printing things on cardstock or adding paper into page protectors. So this is also much more environmentally friendly because you can take the paper out and recycle it, even though you still have the plastic of the page protectors, but laminating doesn't recycle whatsoever. So I prefer page protectors when I can get away with it. So I look for centers that are very easy to use that can do it in that way. But I know not everything is. For example, my sight word letterboxes do not come in a full, well, they could come in a full sheet, but I like to cut them apart. So even I create things that are not super environmentally friendly, I guess you could say. But anyway, so putting some things like paper into page protectors is a great way to avoid the laminating of center materials. If you think of like a full page spinner, or maybe it's a recording sheet, those are great things that maybe don't laminate, maybe just put a couple copies depending on how many kids you'll have in a center station. And then also it saves you on copies. You don't have to have a full set class of copies for the recording sheet if the kids are just wiping it off later. But if you want to see what they've done, maybe you can implement like take a picture with your iPad or your Chromebook, or show it to me quickly, or put it in this pile and then you erase it and return it back the next day. But think through those things. Do you see what I'm saying? Those are important things to really reflect on how you want it to work in your classroom. Like, do you really need to see all the center recording sheets? Or you're just happy that they're getting the practice? Or do you really want to see what they're doing? Then you might want to see the recording sheet. So maybe once in a while you surprise them with a class set of recording sheets so you can kind of check in on their work. But I always highly suggest never taking grades on center work, because it is something for them to be working on independently, practicing with a partner. You don't know how honest they are, right? They're little kids. Sometimes they, you know, they're what I call looky-loos. They're cheating a little bit with their friends, helping each other out, writing for each other, and you're over there at your small group table and you're none the wiser. So anyway, think about that. And going back to paper in a page protector, my favorite thing to do is a handwriting sheet in a page protector, and then they have a dry erase marker that's always at their desk in their pencil box, and it's my favorite morning warm-up before we dive into our phonics. So I just did a whole class set of a handwriting sheet, and I use, is it Dee Dee Wills? She has a handwriting program, and I just use a very basic template of hers. It's just a simple minute to win it, I think she calls it, handwriting sheet, and the kids literally practice the top row and then they get a minute to practice the letter. And it's super quick, super helpful, because if you haven't caught on yet, if you are new to listening to this podcast, second graders have horrible handwriting, and COVID has greatly affected how they write and form their letters. So they might need more handwriting help than they have in the past. So that's a good way to work it in. And plus, you can also do a little bit of phonics, especially early in the school year. You might think they're second grade, they don't need the alphabet. Yes, they do. They will get B's and D's confused. They will have P's and Q's confused. They will not know some of the sounds like W and H. They'll get confused for whatever unknown reason. So you want to make sure that you are saying like, oh, today we're going to work on B and talk about the sound, talk about what it looks like, and then do a very quick handwriting thing. And it only takes maybe 2 minutes once you get into the routine of things. Things always take longer at the beginning, but then you tighten it up and you work towards that expectation of this is only going to take us a couple minutes. You know exactly where your whiteboard is. You know exactly that you should have your handwriting sheet out first thing in the morning, and we're prepared and ready to go as soon as that bell rings, and we don't waste any time. That's how I run it in my classroom, and that is a very good classroom management technique that students know exactly your expectations. They know the routine, they know the schedule, and they could do it without you even there to run it. That is a beautiful classroom, my friends. Okay, now finally, last but not least, is don't forget to relax, okay? It is summer, so my best advice for you is to take the time as a new teacher to just relax. There is always, always going to be a ton to do as a teacher. It's just part of the job. And once school starts, it's going to become quickly overwhelming, like I talked about earlier. So you want to plan for a week or even two to do nothing classroom or school related. Once teaching starts, you could spend all your days, all your evenings even, doing school things if you aren't intentional with your time during your workday. Sometimes even the best planners will have a ton to do and feel like they are always behind because many times teachers just aren't given sufficient planning time. And a lot of times we're given last second deadlines, like on the announcements this year during our school year was like, hey, teachers, don't forget student learning goals are due today by 3 o'clock. And you're looking at the announcements going, it's like 2:30 and you're just telling me this now? Okay, kids, find a book to read. And then you're furiously over there working on your student learning goals, like, because you didn't know they were due and you didn't even know they were expecting them. And half the time, you don't even know how to do anything, so you're knocking on your teacher next door's classroom going, help. So always expect the unexpected, and you'll do fine in teaching. So enjoy your summer and do something relaxing. And by the way, congratulations on your new journey into the world of teaching. I'm very glad you are here and starting off in this profession, and hopefully you'll continue to follow along with me on the podcast. So really quick, today we talked about the best advice for new teachers. We want to start in our summer edition with looking over your curriculum, then create a solid classroom management plan that helps you think about your classroom systems and your classroom management techniques. We want to choose carefully our classroom decor and pick just a few select projects while not forgetting to spend some time to relax. I would love to know, what will you be working on this summer? Feel free to go to Apple Podcast and leave a review of this episode and let me know in that review what was your favorite takeaway from this episode, and also what would you start on first if you could start on anything for your new classroom? Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you coming up this Saturday. Bye for now. If you've loved this show, then join me in sharing the teaching,
hitting that subscribe button,
and leaving us a review on
iTunes,
so we can be found by more teachers like you who are ready to start sharing the workload. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Find new episodes each week on shareteaching.com.
Thanks for listening to the Share Teaching Podcast.